From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Two narratives for older Americans. One, retirement's out of fashion, get an encore career, follow your bliss. The other, hunker down and pray you can't afford to retire. And if you lose your job in this economy with gray in your hair, you could be out of work a long, long time. And then bag groceries until you drop. This hour on Point, older Americans dealing with the down economy, reinvention, and survival. You can join the conversation. Have you had to swallow your pride and start over at 60? Have you found the path to reinvention? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. There's a vision for doing something new and wonderful and sweet. Here's an AARP ad released in 2010 promoting a fulfilling life after the age of 50. Features baby boomers talking about what they'd like to do in their older age.
When I grow up, I want to fix up old houses.
When I grow up, I want to take him on his first flight.
I want to run a marathon.
I'm going to work with kids.
I'm going to own my own restaurant.
Maybe they'll do those things. Maybe they won't. For boomers and above, out of a job in this recession and tough recovery, it has been very difficult indeed. Long, long waits for employment and ageism sometimes staring them right in the face. Here's a little bit from CBS talking with a professional unemployed in Charlotte, North Carolina in 2011. Unemployed baby boomer who said ageism stands between him and a good job.
What really drives you nuts is interviewing and have someone say, you've got the experience, you've got the background, you've got the knowledge, you've got the ability, but God, if you were just 25 years old, we could hire you tomorrow.
If you were just 25 years old, but when you're not, you're not. Joining me first today from Los Angeles is Marcy Albaher, VP at Encore.org. It's a nonprofit that promotes finding work with a social purpose after middle age. She's author of the Encore Career Handbook, How to Make a Living and a Difference in the Second Half of Life. You can read an excerpt of her book at our website. Marcy Albaher, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So we're trying to put all these things together. You know, on the one hand, yes, you've got boomers and above who are feel in a position to go out and have some wonderful second career. On the other, you've got people who have just lost jobs and they're scrambling just to make ends meet at all. You know, eating beans and pounding the pavement looking for a job. Can elders, boomers, and above still dream big? Can they follow their bliss in this economy, Marcy?
Yeah, so the reason I wrote this book is that we've been seeing over the years this incredible urge on the part of boomers not just to take care of themselves and find new work, and you're right, it's a challenge, but an even bigger urge to do work that ends up helping others too. And that's what I've celebrated in this book, and the people that I've been speaking to have figured out how to do both those things. But it's not easy, and I'd love to talk to you about some of the ways people are making it happen.
Well, I mean, you look at what they're up against. We saw these numbers coming out recently. You know, the average duration of unemployment for older people, 53 weeks, sort of way more than for anybody else. Once they fall off, they fall off the branch. Americans in their 50s and 60s lost more earning power than any other age group. And, of course, you know very well, Marcy, that's just when they're looking at maybe finally paying off the mortgage or paying off, paying for school's education or taking care of their own parents. I mean, when you're up against all that, where do the dreams go?
Yeah, so what's interesting is when you're up against all that and you've dealt with this economy, what's fascinating is that the recession has even made it more important for people who have an urge to get out there and make a difference because they see others even more hard hit. I've heard countless stories, Tom, of somebody who was low themselves and ended up volunteering for some community organization to help others less fortunate than they. And it turned into a job. So one of the most important things to do if you're feeling out on your heels, down on your heels, is to get out there and get out of your own space, get out of your own house. Don't focus on sending out a lot of resumes. Instead, focus on getting out in the world and being of service as easily as you can. And there are some organizations now that have cropped up that are trying to take advantage of the skills of baby boomers. Organizations like Reserve that's in several cities around the country that pays, you know, a although more than volunteering, but less than a full-time job, but, you know, $10 an hour to get out there and help nonprofits and government agencies that are looking for these skills and experiences of older workers. Often those things are very gratifying when you do them, but they're a pathway to new kinds of work.
What makes the difference, you know? I mean, how does it unfold? Who ends up making a difference and who ends up, I don't know, tying on an apron at Home Depot at minimum wage?
You know, so the way into new kinds of work is to kind of hang around in the world that you want to live in for a while. So if you're interested in working with young people, as that great AARP commercial pointed out, lots of people at this age really want to work with young people, then see what's available to do substitute teaching in a school or to work in a youth group in your community. Once you start networking around and getting to know, you know, who do you know that's working in fields that interest you and making yourself available, you'll see what opportunities are existing. It's, of course, important to have a good resume, but these days it's way more important to get a profile up on LinkedIn and connect with people who you know, and not so much focusing on sending out resumes to every ad. You know, I'm tired of those stories that start with, you know, John Smith sent out 200 resumes to no reply, because that's not really how John Smith's going to get his next work.
Older Americans being told they may not be able to retire, many not prepared financially to retire. But staying in the workforce can be challenging the older you get. Here's Dorothy Carlos, 68 years old, retired medical professional, interviewed recently for an online documentary called Over 50 and Out of Work. She says she had a rough time after losing her hospital job.
So what do? I started looking for a job, and it seemed like, you know, with my education, a BS degree, non-invasive vascular diagnosing, all kind of specialties, I can't find a job. And what I would do when I go on interviews is say, I just want to work. I don't want to sit home. I still have a lot of life in me. Please don't put me out to pasture.
Please don't put me out to pasture. Marcy Albahar, stand by, please, in Los Angeles. With us right now as well from New Brunswick, New Jersey, is Carl Van Horn, professor of public policy, director of the Heldrick Center for Workforce Development, and author of Working Scared or Not at All, coming out next month. You can see an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Carl Van Horn, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be with you, Marcy.
So I crack open a digital version of your book here. Chapter 4 is about older Americans, and it's not very encouraging. Chapter title, Misery and Bleak Expectations for Older Unemployed Workers. What's going on and why, Carl?
Well, as you've been talking, that group of older Americans that has done everything right, played by the rules, worked for many years, got really hit very hard by this recession. Many of them lost a job for the first time in their life. And their reemployment rate, once they did lose a job, was the lowest of any demographic group, much less than half those of the middle-aged workers. So they really had a great difficulty getting back in the workforce. And as you said before, this is at the worst time possible when they're trying to build up some savings for retirement. It's really wrecked the plans of many of them. And so when they look to the future, they're very, very discouraged, and for good reason.
I see here you saying that only 15% of those laid off able to get another full-time job, and when they do, it's often with a huge pay cut. What are you seeing, Carl?
We found 6 in 10 of those who were able to get a job, and again, that's a very small number of people who did get another job, they earned less than they had in their prior job. And 1 in 6 of those people, 14%, said they paid less than half. So for many of these people, in fact, most of them, even if they found another job, it was at a huge pay cut. And then you add on top of that, many of them lost huge amounts of their savings, were in some cases lost their homes. About 6% of those who we followed for a couple of years, by the way, we re-interviewed these national sample of unemployed workers. 6% of them lost their homes. About a similar number declared bankruptcy. So it was just an absolute devastating economic experience for many of them. And, of course, those who didn't get another job at all have suffered even more.
You talk with one financial analyst, a former financial analyst, now working at a big box store, making $10 an hour, no benefits, zip, nothing. And you say lots of older workers are now putting together several part-time jobs, but benefits out of reach for many, healthcare coverage.
Right, and so many of them fall in this age group where they can't get into Medicare. They had employer-provided health care insurance, and now they can't afford to buy it, so they're self-insuring, meaning they're going without medical care. A very large number of us told us that they stopped going for preventative health care, and I can tell you, as an older American myself, this is exactly the time you need to be doing that, taking care of yourself and being careful. You can get away with that maybe in your 20s, but you can't in your 50s. So, again, a lot of them lost that, and, of course, it is true that those who are working part-time are better off than those who are not, because at least they're earning some money and they're having the opportunity, perhaps, to get into a full-time job. But again, it's not without this huge cost of losing income and losing benefits for most.
At the same time, Marcy, you're saying, look, you're acknowledging that this is a time when people don't want to give up on their dreams. These are supposed to be great years, and they are, by definition, the last decades of life. You're trying to help people be creative about how to go out and make a reality that they can enjoy.
Yeah, I can't argue with anything that Carl said. He's right on the money. But there is the people who are surviving are figuring out ways to get new skills and training, so we should talk about that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about tough times for older workers. Many can't retire or find a job. It can be brutal out there. We're looking at boomers on up in trouble and still hoping for their dreams. Carl Van Horn is with us, author of the forthcoming Working Scared or Not At All, joins us from New Brunswick, New Jersey, and Rutgers University. Marcy Albahar is with us, vice president at Encore.org. It's a nonprofit that promotes new careers after middle age. She's out with the Encore Career Handbook. There's an excerpt of each of those at our website. It can be tough out there. Here's Rick Peterson, 61 years old, IT professional, unemployed since 2007 when he talked to the documentary series Over 50 and Out of Work.
I'm trying to focus more on figuring out how to start my own business. But I feel like the only way I'm going to get hired is if I hire myself, if I'm able to figure out some way to hire myself. The next 5, 10, 15 years of my life will be working my tail off. So I do not anticipate retiring ever. I don't anticipate I'll be able to.
And how old are people thinking they may still need to work, still looking for models of older working Americans? Well, here's 78-year-old Howard Ring telling the PBS NewsHour that more companies should hire old people. He works at 78 for VitaNeedle, a manufacturing company that intentionally hires seniors.
Look, the Supreme Court has got people over 80 in it, and we don't think much about that, so why can't we do this with other people?
It can be tough out there, but people still want to dream. Let me go to Joanne calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Joanne, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks for having me.
What do you see?
Excuse me?
What do you see out there?
What do I see out here? Nobody's hiring older workers. And if you do get hired, you're talking minimum wage. South Carolina has the U.S. minimum wage. It's not like other states where they've upped it to $8.50 or $9. Earlier, you had somebody on there who talked about volunteering and getting paid maybe $10 an hour.
Yeah.
I've worked retail, and I would love to make $10 an hour. I've worked as working retail. The older you are, the less respect you get from the customers, and then the customers get mad and complain about you because whatever, and then you get written up, and if you get written up, South Carolina is a right to work and an at-will state. You have no recourse as an employee, and you can get fired. I know some older workers who have physical problems, whether it's sight or hearing or just the ability to stand, and you have to do that in retail.
Sure.
And they're afraid to ask for allowances because they're afraid they're going to get fired.
Joanne, may I ask how old you are and how long you expect to keep working?
I'm almost 60, and I figure at least another 10, 15 years if I can find a job.
Joanne, I appreciate your call. I mean, that's making it real, Carl Van Horn. You know, that sounds tough. Joanne would be happy to have a job that paid $10 an hour.
Yeah, in fact, in our survey, we found 7 in 10 of the folks that we asked, the older workers, said that the recession and the experience had reconstructured and scrambled their retirement plans. And about half of those said they would probably never be able to retire. The other half said they were forced to retire early. And those, of course, were the ones who were slightly older. And in most cases, what they did was they took Social Security at age 62, which, as many people know, means that you probably make about one-third less. But that was really their only choice. That's right.
Yeah.
It's permanently less. And, of course, some of them also went on disability insurance because they were eligible for that. And that, of course, does not pay very much, but it does provide something and also provides health care coverage.
Marcy, you know, here's a listener in South Carolina who sort of dreams of volunteering at $10 an hour somewhere, or maybe wouldn't even see that as volunteering. It sounds like a decent paycheck to her, better than she's had. How does that strike your ear, Marcy?
Yeah, I mean, I feel for that woman, and I know what she's experiencing. So I can share some of the creative ways that people are dealing with this. So one area that comes up a lot in conversations is people who have a home where they can't refinance it anymore. They can't sell it to downsize to someplace else, and they're finding ways to use their home. So that's an interesting thing that I see people being very creative about.
Use their home. Do you mean reverse mortgage?
I also mean, as somebody said recently to me, having the home get a job. So, you know, use it to run your business out of it, or to rent the space, or to do something with the space that you have if you have that. For many, many people, the home has become this albatross that they can't do something.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get rid of it. So that's one thing that I see happening. And, you know, the gentleman who talked about starting his own business because he felt that the only way he was going to make it was to hire himself. The entrepreneurial surge in this age group, and I'm talking small scale entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. really doing something where you're using your own skills to do something that comes naturally to you or that you care about. And you could be doing that on the side while you have another job, while you're building something up. I mean, I was on a panel last night with this woman, Nancy Burkhart, here in LA, who started a no toxic paint company with her daughter who had just graduated college. They do it out of their home with a web-based presence. She had been making ends meet by cleaning houses for years and doing anything she can, working in a restaurant on the side. And this business is finally taking off, and she feels really proud of the business. It's a great way to be around her grandchildren and to help her daughter and to be doing something together. It's not easy, but and she doesn't think she's going to be stopping working either. I think those refrains we're hearing,
mm-hmm.
If you've got to figure out what you're going to do for the next kind of 10 to 20 years, it's worth investing in yourself and figuring out what's going to work for you for this period, because it's not a short-term solution that people need.
Carl Van Horn, what about it? It's not easy, but I don't know, maybe go out and start your own business, boomer, senior.
Well, Marcy's absolutely right. I mean, that is a path for some. Unfortunately, it's not available to most, and that's because either they don't have access to capital or they just don't have that kind of personality, that sense. We ask people that question, and only about 5% had gone into entrepreneurship, and that was a great opportunity and liberating for many of them. But in order to get to that pathway, I want to come back to something Marcy said before, mm-hmm. which is many people need a little bit of training and help to even understand how you start a business. You know, it's not difficult to people who've done it, but it's a huge obstacle to people who've never done it. And so in many cases, they need to get some help. And again, this is an area where there could be, I think, some help from the government. And that is, we need to orient more retraining programs to older Americans, because the programs we have in the United States right now really aren't oriented towards them. They're mainly towards younger people, middle-aged folks, because that's where typically we think the problems are. And it's not that they don't have problems. But now in this particular era, we have this huge number, and I think I estimate it to be over 2 million people who lost their jobs in this recession, who are over 55, and they can't get another job. And so those folks need some help. We found that only about 14% of the older Americans were able to get retraining, and most of them paid for it themselves. So there's an area where we really could help these folks make that transition, whether it's to entrepreneurship or to another career.
That may require a change in national mindset. I have a feeling a lot of politicians might look at it the same way as some employers, with ageism, saying, what, retraining programs for people who are 60? You know, train the young.
Well, that, you know, Tom, that's one of the problems. You know, employers, understandably, don't want to retrain older workers typically because they make a return on investment calculation and say, hey, it's not going to pay off. Well, this is a place where the government should be making that assessment because alternatively, if it doesn't, if the government doesn't invest in the human capital of these older Americans, what's going to happen? We're going to wind up paying more in disability benefits, early retirement benefits through Social Security and other social programs like supplemental nutrition assistance, otherwise known as food stamps. In other words, there's costs if we don't help these people get back in the labor force.
I mean, not least, the average duration of unemployment for older people, 53 weeks compared to 19 weeks for the much younger. On the other hand, there's a brutal calculus here, too. Some recent surveys, Carl, saying that, you know, older people who go into a recession have reduced life expectancy. They just die younger.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I haven't done those studies, but I've read them, and the mortality of people who lose their jobs is greater than those who don't, and that's totally understandable. Go back to what I said before. If they're forgoing health care and they're stressed and depressed, it not only diminishes their health status, but also in some cases it kills them. And that's another reason why we need to be focused on this group. It's a silent minority of folks who you were calling in, and we hear from them, mm-hmm. but they're not in the forefront of many policymakers' minds. And it's an important question that we really need to address as a country.
Let's go to Hans calling from Iowa City. Hans, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm just calling in because I'm one of the older Americans. I'm 58 now, and I was laid off in 2008 from a corporate job as a web designer.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent several years just trying to find a company who would hire me, and I finally had to go back to school, bring up all my technical abilities, and I went to school for 2.5 years and worked really hard and got a degree in web technologies and got a job as a web designer with a great company. But it really is who you know when you get to be this age. You know, you basically, I got this job through the college that I worked with, that I went to school with for 2.5 years, and it's very difficult for companies to hire older Americans, especially if you don't have the technical abilities that most young people coming out of these schools have.
So what was it like? I don't know. Did you go in cold looking for a job as a web designer at 58 and have people just give you the eye and say, no thanks? Or you were connected, sort of wired up?
I had a great portfolio, a great online portfolio. I had all the abilities, but there were some areas that in my technical abilities I had to bring up. But I would go in, I have an online portfolio, so people would look at it and they would bring me in. But it's just a tough competition with younger people if you don't have the technical abilities. Because, I think people like to hire older people, but in my area of expertise, you're dealing and competing with people that are just coming out of college, and it's difficult.
Hans, I appreciate your call. Let me put it to Marcy, if I may. I mean, what do you find, Marcy, about ageism and how much it hits people looking to reinvent themselves, as many have had to do, including our caller there from Iowa?
So Hans is exactly right. Ageism is real, but it's very important to separate ageism from the issue that Hans talked about, which is finding in interviews that you may not have the skills you need for the job you're talking about. I mean, I have a person in the book, Priscilla Santiago, who is a laid-off forklift operator in Bridgeport, Connecticut, who, through the unemployment office, decided to go back and get her GED through a job counselor's advice at unemployment. After getting her GED, she went on to get an associate's degree and onto a 4-year degree. She graduated from college at 63 and got a new job in a job placement center helping people who are really battered by this recession.
Right.
More satisfied than she's ever been. But when I talk to Priscilla, what she says to me is, you know, she was realizing that there was no way she was going to find new work without a high school diploma, let alone a college diploma. And she's now an evangelist for encouraging other people to do. You know, she went to school while her grandkids did, and she has great grandchildren. So
That's wild.
I think, you know, she's an inspiration to me and a really extreme example of this. I think Hans is a little more what it's typical, which is going back for a limited duration to fill in gaps where you need to. And the best place to look is your community college, because community colleges have their finger on the pulse of where the jobs are in communities.
A little closer to real. We're talking about a change of mindset there for individuals, not just for society, ready to go back to school at 60, graduate at 63. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let me get a call from Stephanie in Beverly, Massachusetts here. Hi, Stephanie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you so much for talking about this really important topic.
Mm-hmm.
I am 51 years old.
Yeah.
My position was eliminated in November of 2010. I am not even counted in the statistics because I did not receive any unemployment benefits. So I'm probably representing some people who are not even in the visible equation. And based on my experience and experience with some friends, I think ageism begins at around 40. My background is architecture and facilities management and planning.
Okay.
I have not even been able to get a call back or an acknowledgement on many, many jobs. I mean, I've applied for everything, even, you know, clerk in a lumberyard, and I've come to realize that I, like a previous caller, will probably have to create my own opportunity. And the challenge comes in that not all of us are really cut out to be entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what I'm wrestling with. I'm giving myself a little breather, you know, and then we had a house which we sold. So we kind of liquidated everything we had, and we have a child with special needs. So that throws in another layer of expense.
Wow.
But I hope that my health holds out, because I will have to reinvent myself somehow, and I will probably be working until I can't stand up anymore. And as far as my experience, you know, with an architecture degree and credentials, it doesn't seem to be worth the paper it's written on, because all of my design experience doesn't seem to weigh up against a younger person, you know, and I work constantly to keep my skills current. I, you know, became very good at AutoCAD and working on other things. But it's a different world there. It's not really a kind one for a mature individual. And, you know, that just seems to be what it is.
Stephanie, we wish you all the luck in the world. That is a lot to be up against, but you go get it. Carl Van Horn, I mean, ageism begins at 40. And you can hear Stephanie there at 51, liquidating assets and still with a lot of life responsibilities. I mean, it can just sound overwhelmingly daunting. And the education she already has, not worth the paper it's written on, she's feeling, Carl.
Unfortunately, Stephanie's story is all too common in America. And I think one of the things we haven't talked about yet is that for many people, this experience is devastating psychologically, and they cannot simply will themselves back into the labor market. You know, they need help. And about one in six Americans that we talked to told us that they had sought professional help. Of course, many people don't, either because they're uncomfortable doing that or they can't afford it. So there's a sort of mental health epidemic out there, if you will, of people who are stressed out, worried, withdrawing, and not doing all the things that Marcy said you need to do, which I agree with, to get themselves back into the labor market. So there's another problem. Now, it didn't sound like Stephanie's doing that. She's working hard and she's doing the best she can. But it's extremely dispiriting when you send in an application and you never get an acknowledgement.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about tough times for older workers, and they sure are. Many cannot retire or find a job. We're looking at boomers on up, very often in trouble, wanting to dream, but you've also just got to put beans on the table at the least. With Carl Van Horn, Rutgers University author of Working Scared or Not at All, coming out next month, and Marcy Albaher, VP at Encore.org. Her book is The Encore Career Handbook, How to Make a Living and a Difference in the Second Half of Life. We've got just situations coming here. Carl, Marcy, here's just one from Joe. Everybody's writing about, you know, the troubles here. It says, I was laid off at 52 after 27 years with my company. My job is essentially obsolete, so I'm starting over, and I'm scared, Joe writes. says, I've applied for jobs paying 35% less than I was making to be told I'm overqualified. Why hire someone my age when 25-year-olds who have never earned a good wage are scrambling for work, especially when the market locally is flooded by layoffs? I'm trying to decide, Joe writes, whether to look for a roommate or to sell my house. I mean, Carl, you describe it. This is by no means uncommon, but that is rough.
Oh, that's absolutely right. We found that actually among older Americans, 60% of them told us that they had sold possessions to make ends meet. A large number of them had borrowed money from their adult children. So they're doing all of these major, major financial restructurings just to try to survive, and even some of them have become homeless. So it is a very difficult situation. And as I said before the break, you know, a lot of these people need help. And I did want to mention that even if they can't afford it, there are other volunteer groups that help. I think Marcy's book points out a lot of these strategies that people are using to get support so they can actually make the mental leap, if you will, to cope with this and to cope with it financially, because in many cases it is extremely difficult on them financially, and they can't do it themselves. They really need help.
Marcy, you write about what you call the new frugality. Describe some of that for us.
Yeah. So, by the way, The New Frugality is the name of a book by one of your NPR colleagues, Chris Farrell, who gives great advice about this. Mm-hmm. And the new frugality really is people who are thinking of how what kind of trade-offs they can make. You know, that caller who said, I'm thinking about getting a roommate is just the kinds of things I'm talking about, using your house in very creative ways, thinking about the kinds of things that young people are all too familiar with today. What kind of trade-offs can you make for the life you want in this life stage? And often making some changes on the financial side of your life might give you some freedom to accept different kinds of work and maybe work that matters more to you if you're willing to really think carefully about, you know, what you're willing to give up. And a lot of that has to do with where you're living and what your kind of daily overhead is like. I mean, I've talked to countless people who are, you know, who are not raising children anymore, who are maybe on their own after a divorce or being widowed, women who are kind of, you know, moving in together. That's a common story we hear about and sharing resources. But, you know, this is something we're going to have to figure out, not just for this generation, but, you know, we're all going to be living longer. So I see this as, we know what Carl made some great points about things the government needs to pay attention to. But this is we should all be thinking about this. It's an issue that all families are caring about right now, because the young people of today are going to hit this age group and realize that they've got to plan for what used to be a 30-year work span, but it's now looking like a 40 or 50-year-old work span. So I think we all have to be thinking about this creatively together. It's a national issue, not just an issue that affects those people who are living it right now.
The new frugality for older Americans, what, shopping at thrift stores you're describing here, moving to a place where it's cheaper to live, renting out part of your home, giving up on splurges, looking for better rates on internet and cable. Can you get by without a car? Carl, a lot of these things, if people get into a bind, they may just be unavoidable, but it's hardly what I think a lot of people envisioned at one time for their golden years.
That's right. Actually, one of the sections of my book, I call it the not-so-golden years, because I think this came as an enormous shock to Americans, because all of us, I think, most of your listeners can remember that at the end of the 20th century, in the late 90s, we had a booming economy. We had the lowest unemployment rates that we'd had since World War II. Everyone was talking about people retiring at age 51 or 55 and going into their life's avocation and traveling and enjoying leisure and family. And then all of a sudden, the next decade comes along and it's a totally different story. So it's not only that it is bad, but the expectations were such that people really thought that we'd sort of reached this new sweet spot, that we could work and retire early. But as Marcy said, I think that was unrealistic. Now, it is true that a return of demand and a growth of the economy will cure many of these problems. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened yet. We've recovered more than half the jobs we lost. But that still means we've got a long way to go. So there's a big macroeconomic story here, which is until the economy recovers and continues to grow at a rapid pace, not at what it did last quarter, which actually contracted, all these problems we're talking about cannot be solved, because if you don't have growth and demand for jobs and business and services, there aren't going to be opportunities.
And part of this, as you say, is a psychological adjustment. Mari writes online here. She says, shame and emotional depression are preventing us from uniting to better our plight. Lots of adjustments of all kinds being just coming down the pike, whether you like them or not, here for many. Mike in Miami, Florida. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to comment as a veteran. I've been probably eligible for PTSD benefits for years and years, but I've never sought them. I've done well. I've enjoyed working, but mm-hmm. I was laid off a few years ago. Been looking for work since. And what's sad is the new retraining act, which is a real blessing for veterans. The expiration of that is the age of 60. And so at the age of 60, I wouldn't be eligible for Social Security for some years.
Right.
And I can't get retraining for the particular license in my field that would be beneficial. And so as a result, I'm having to think seriously of going in, seeking benefits that I probably would be entitled to but never sought, which is going to cost the government far more than retraining me for a year for the license I'd need to continue. And one caveat to that, I've applied for positions and seen, particularly in the treating veterans for PTSD, mm-hmm. as you know, the rate of mortality now and suicide among the services is the highest in history. And yet I'm seeing people hired who are probably very well trained, but have sometimes less than a year of counseling experience. These are the people sometimes being hired to treat combat vets. And there's a number of us, I think, who would be better qualified if we had the opportunity to get the particular license that's held in high esteem now for that field.
Yeah, Mike, I appreciate your call from Miami. Let us pick it up. I mean, Carl, there's an example of training running out at 60, just when Mike in Miami may need it. And also a reference there, you know, Mike is now thinking about looking at those PTSD benefits that might be there for veterans. I'm reading, Carl, that lots of older Americans are now going to some form of federal disability. More than 1 in 8 now on some kind of federal disability insurance program. What's driving that, Carl?
Desperation. I think, as Mike said, there are many, many Americans thousands who are eligible for disability but don't apply for it. They'd rather work. They're able to work, and they've been managing. And then when they're forced up against it, you lose your house, you declare bankruptcy, you're facing homelessness or some other horrible situation, and you say, what else am I going to do? And so I understand why they do it. Most of them do it very reluctantly. As Mike also said, and I alluded to this before, that many training programs really aren't oriented towards the older worker. And in his specific case, this is a veterans program which closes out at the point where he needs help. And that needs to change.
Marcy, some people are just going to need that disability, though when the economy was better, many avoided it. I mean, there's a combination of tough reality and mindsets meeting here. And you're encouraging a kind of flexible mindset. People may resist it, say, look, I didn't come here to make these changes, but you're saying that it may be the best of tough options sometimes. Rethink, reimagine.
Yeah, I think Mike's story hits on something that I was hoping we could get to also, which is the whole world of health needs. It has many different aspects to it. So Carl has talked about, you know, this crisis we have around health insurance, and obviously these people who are caught before Medicare, and as we saw with Mike, having benefits run out are a huge part of it. It's also a very interesting flip side in that healthcare is the area where there are the most jobs and consistent job growth. And it's when I talk to people about their reinventions, so often everything from home healthcare workers to businesses that have to do with meeting a health need like keeping aging people safe and living in their homes, which is the kinds of things like that architect who may want to reinvent might find opportunities in. So it's a very interesting area where I think a lot of these things converge. And I mean, Mike's story really raises the issue also of, I think it was so smart to point out that Often an older veteran who has gone through PSDS might be the perfect person to retrain to be a counselor for people going through that themselves. And if there's one area where I see older, experienced people valued the most, it's in counseling roles, where people want to go to somebody who's been through life experience and who's maybe lived through things. We see it with addiction, with grief counseling. Mm-hmm. People who've lived through something are in the best place to help others going through that very same thing. And I would really encourage Mike to figure out some ways to figure out how to get trained to do that work. And I understand that benefits are running out, but that's the kind of place where he would be so valued to be able to help others.
I can see counseling roles as promising for older Americans, but home health care work? I mean, whose aspiration is that? We need it. It's important, but, you know, it's like one elder taking care of another. I guess so. But
it's a very common model, actually. Often, the elderly really relate to people who and often middle-aged people are very connected to, I mean, who've gone through caring for an elder themselves, mm-hmm. yep. know what it's like.
Yep.
And there are many levels of what that can look like. It can be anything from entry-level work to rising up the kind of healthcare ladder where you do nurse visitations, and there are many, many areas of growth there and need, and that's not going to diminish anytime soon.
We're way off the golf course here. Let's go to Charlie in Kansas City, Missouri. Charlie, thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom. Thanks. Love your show.
Thank you.
I've transitioned into another career. I'm 58 years old. I used to be a building inspector. I did that for 8 years.
Yeah.
And was able to grow in my career, land a federal job, was a space leasing representative for the 2010 census
yeah.
in the federal, and hope to transition into another federal job, or hope that the building industry would come back. Municipalities are not hiring. Cities are broke. And about a year ago, decided I needed to become a truck driver. So I am now an over-the-road driver.
Where do you drive to and from, Charlie? Is it cross-country, long-haul, or what is it?
I'm out 21 days at a time.
Wow.
I have been in 35 states in the last 8 months, and I'm driving close to 10,000 miles a month.
You're 58 years old. How many years can you picture doing that?
Well, you know, the thing about truck driving is, as long as you can pass a DOT physical and your driving record is good, you will have a job.
Are you finding your bliss out there on the road, or are you grinding your teeth and, you know, cursing the job?
Well, my kids are grown and on their own and stable, and I'm grateful for that. And this satisfies a bit of a wanderlust for me. I've got friends all over the country. With cell phones and Facebook, it's not as bad as once it was, I'm sure.
Charlie, you got a great attitude, and we wish you all the best with it. I will look more kindly at every truck driver I see thinking of you behind that wheel. Good luck with it. Thanks for calling in from Kansas City. One more right here, Jan in Nashville. You're on, Jan.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I can certainly identify with Charlie, but I'm going to one-up him a little bit.
Okay.
I'll give you the 5-cent version of what's happened, and then I'm going to tell you how we have creatively solved it.
Okay.
My husband and I both have degrees. We started a business 35 years ago, which supported us really well all the way through the Reagan years. We were Mercedes driving.
Woohoo!
And in 2007, one of our largest customers took bankruptcy. The trend started to slide. We employed a lot of people. We didn't know anything else. Here we are in our late 50s, and we're going, wait, the business is going to fail?
Right.
So we cannibalized our savings, cannibalized it. I can't believe how fast we blew through everything we had saved.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked up and said, my gosh, we're not going to be able to save this. We were 62 and 63 years old. We could not find a job to save our soul. I would ace a telephone interview, but as soon as I walked into that office, they were nice as could be, but they never called me back.
Yep.
And so we said, what are we going to do? And so what we did is we sold our house. We had an estate sale and sold everything we owned. I'm literally on the road right now to sell my truck.
And then what?
And
We are moving Saturday to South America.
How will you live?
I'm going to live. We're going to live on Social Security alone, and we are going to live a decent middle-class lifestyle.
What country are you headed for, Jan?
Ecuador. You know what? I don't want to tell you too much about how fabulous it is where I'm going, because I don't want it overrun with people like me.
Jen, you got a great attitude. We wish you all the best in South America. Your retirement path, that is some kind of story. Thank you so much for calling from Nashville. Marcy, is that what it's going to take?
Fascinating. What I was going to say is that most of the people I talk to are not that ready to give up on the U.S. and to give up on their neighbors. So, but good luck to her.
Carl Van Hoorn, we can sure see what's pushing people there. You know, there's a good description of what makes it happen, and off they go to South America, Carl.
Well, tough times bring out creative solutions, and then Jan's example is certainly a one. And you know, a lot of young people are doing that, too. They're going abroad in order to find their first job because they can't find one here.
Jan, we're going to think of you down there. Good luck to you. Good luck to everybody, it sounds like. Carl Van Hoorn, author of Working Scared, thank you for joining us today. And Marcy Albaher, author of the Encore Career Handbook. Good luck, one and all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.